Intervju Radija Študent.
The Last Poets. Lep pozdrav v intervjuju Radija Študent, v katerem boste poslušali intervju z legendarno ameriško zasedbo The Last Poets, ki je v nedeljo nastopila na VIP Jazz festivalu v Zagrebu. The Last Poets so legendarna zasedba poetov in glasbenikov, ki je v 60-ih letih izšla iz ameriškega črnskega gibanja za civilne pravice in bila vedno zelo povezana z militantnim črnskim nacionalizmom. Sama zasedba se je denimo ustanovila 19. maja leta 1968, torej na rojstni dan Malcolma X-a. Njihov istoimenski prvenec, ki je izšel leta 1970, pa je tisto leto celo prišel med 10 najbolj prodajanih plošč v Ameriki. The Last Poets so svojo glasbo močno vplivali na pojav hip-hop kulture. Hkrati pa so v svoj spoj glasbe in poezije vedno vključevali elemente bluza, džeza, afriških poliritmij, vplivo iz Jamajke in denimo ritmične in zvočne omamnosti maroške glasbene tradicije. Skratka, glasbena izročila tako črne celine kot lastne afroameriške diaspore. Veliko izvornih članov je že preminilo. Last Poets pa so v Zagrebu nastopili v svoji zadnji postavi, med katerimi sta poeta Abiodun Oyewole in Umar bin Hasan. Z njima se je pogovarjal naš zagrebški sodelavec Vidje Raj.
So basically, so my name is Vid. Hello Mr. Umar, hello Mr. Abiodun. Basically, with your first record, when you started out in back in 69, you made 800,000 copies were sold from...
Yeah, well, that number is a little blown up, but it was more like 400,000 copies were sold in about 3 months. And it was primarily because we were, like, loved by our people. We were the... that revolutionary voice of the times. We're young and vibrant, and people really, the people gave us a lot of support. Mm-hmm. So when we were performing around in America, but we had no recording, and when it was found out that we had a recording out, people went crazy. They just had to buy it, had to have it. 40 years later, I have CDs of that first album, and that still is the biggest seller on our tour.
And then plus, here with these young men, 19 and 20, saying all these radical, innovative, explosive, and exciting things about black people and white people and the whole context of the American drama of racial integration and segregation. So, you know, where these young kids get all this stuff? I mean, where they come up? And sometimes, I don't even think we knew that information or where those words were coming from. We were just there at that moment in time. And we, I guess the ancestors and all the people who were higher than us, believed in us, is here, y'all, you guys are going to become the guys that really excite the black community during these times and carry these words to them and make them, yeah, understand where they're at and where they should be. So, and to be back here now, man, to be in Croatia in 2010, at our age and all what we've been through, we're not really mad at nobody either, because we are still alive doing this. We're still alive doing this. And there's people out here probably getting paid more than we're getting, and yet don't have the talent or the experience or the influence we have, but we come here, and like last night, we had a wonderful time last night hanging out with the people. So that's what we do. We come and enjoy the people enjoy us, and then what rewards, we get them somewhere along the line, they come to us, you know. Yeah. And I think maybe if we'd have got all that money when we were young, anyway, we probably fucked it up, you know.
It would be a different story.
It would have been a different story.
So how does it feel being called a black nationalist for 40 years?
Well, you know, there's nothing wrong with black nationalism. Black nationalism simply says that I want to see black people have some power. I want to see black people standing on their own two feet and not having to beg or write a proposal for our basic daily needs. So black nationalism does not denote white nationalism. It doesn't denote anything. It just simply says we have been a people without power for so long. So in order for us to get it together, get some power, we need to come together. So we need black schools, black, you know,
self-empowerment.
Yeah, self-empowerment.
Among ourselves, you know, so we don't have to depend on people from outside to support us. We can support ourselves independently.
Exactly.
So that's what the Black Power movement is all about. And due to the fact that we had laws in the country that prevented us from doing that.
Yeah,
that told us that we could not do, it was against the law to own your own store, against the law to own your own house, against the law to cut the grass a certain way, that kind of shit.
It was even against the law for a man, for a black man, to raise his daughter if there was no woman in the house. Because my grandfather was a victim of that. Back in the 30s and the 40s, they said, if a black man has a daughter, has a female child, and there's no woman, they'll come and take the child away.
Yeah.
Almost indicating that a black man is a savage, he's going to rape his daughter. We don't have no history of that.
You can read this in also in Bukowski. For example, he and his girlfriend, she had a daughter, and they couldn't hire an apartment at the entire LA. They were just going around looking for an apartment because she was widowed. They were not married, and by this certain law, you know, you can't get nowhere to live. You know.
Yeah.
Actually, the irony of this thing, us being called black nationalists. In the beginning, we've always looked out for ourselves. We've had to look out for ourselves.
Exactly.
Because nobody looked out for us. And the irony of them calling us black nationalists because, you know, we won't take ourselves. The thing is that we had places where we showed that we could take care of ourselves, thrive and progress by ourselves. A place called Tulsa, Oklahoma. Black Wall Street. Black Wall Street, a place, Rosewood in Florida, where black people band together to have their own stores, their own doctors, their own pharmacies. Mm-hmm. But poor white people were jealous of our creativity and our sense of knowing how to survive all that silliness and that sickness. Decided, well, you know, we can't let these niggas have this. We got to burn it down. So when white people in America always talking about, y'all can't take care of yourselves, or, oh, black people, a bunch of crybabies, it's bullshit. We've always been able to take care of ourselves. But out of your jealousy of us as creative and smart and intelligent human beings, you come and tear this shit right down, then tell us we can't take care of ourselves.
Right.
Yeah, this multiply problem of supporting yourself, not only as an artist, comes back up to Charles Mingus, the Butte label, the Sun Ra's, releasing and all this thing. Coming,
it goes back farther than that, called Black Swan Records in the Renaissance in Harlem, the first really only black record company in America at the time. Fletcher Henderson was one of the stars, Ethel Water was one of the stars, and they had a band called the Black Swan Troubadours. Mm-hmm. Those were the first people who recorded, and they had a sister who sang, Mamie Love was on that that level of time. So they were, when they really started selling records, all the other white companies realized that they could make money off of black music, so they came and took a lot of their competition away, and they had to fold because of not only that, but because of radio and stuff. But there, we've always found a way to get our stuff done, man. Right. That's who we are, that's what we do.
So coming out on the scene during the 70s, with just the percussion and two voices, how did you react to the emergence of hip hop? What people tried sampling Kraftwerk samples over two turntables and a microphone.
Wow.
I saw recently, like 6 months ago, on All About Jazz, there was an interview with Bernie Nix, a colleague of Mr. Geraldin Takuma from Primetime. So he said that it's not surprised that this new generation played the two turntables and the microphone because the supplies were gone for Vietnam and didn't have money to buy the instruments.
Not only that type of money, but it was that's when music was taken out of the schools.
Mm-hmm.
So you had no music, no outlet. So the kids turned to beatbox, or box where they took the beat. And it was so funny because I came up in that time, but I came up in that time, and the thing is funny for me was that, you know, I had a friend of mine, Red Alert, a famous DJ in New York. We grew up in the same place, you know, same projects. But for me, I was involved in black arts, black culture, the black art movement. I was part of a child.
There was a black
in New York. The black art movement, that was a product of that. So my emphasis was learning percussion and African theology through music and to understand, you know, that was a passion. I just couldn't let it go. Not just healing, but it was just a passion that it just grabbed me and I was going with it. So my emphasis was dealing with the drum. And it was one time we were sitting out there in the park. He had his turntable and I had my drum, but we never played together. We just, I'm on the side, he's over there. I said, this is who's going to make it. You know, but look what happened. You know, so, but the turntable became a, I mean, it's percussive also. You know, you start moving the beats around and you know, so it become very percussive and very innovative. So, you know, me being focusing on the drum and the technique and, you know, so it was a different vibe. But now coming to this point, you can see where, you know, all of it does come together and, you know, can show appreciation. But then and for the masses of people who were involved, there was less, there weren't, it wasn't as much exposure to African culture. Like, you know, there wasn't that much happening for them to feed off of. So then hip hop become the next phenomenon.
Common ground.
It took birth from the Last Poets and from Miri Baraka and Nicki Giovanni and those people, but they were the grandchildren of that, or the children of that. You know, they took it and made it into something else. But they made it into something that was very positive at the time. Mm-hmm. It was very positive. It was like.
Understand, said the old black man, that everything works in opposites. Sun and the moon, left and right, hot and cold, black and white. Understand, said the old black man, who is the opposite of you. Understand, so that you will know what you have to do. Understand that black is true and false is white. Understand that black is right and white is wrong. Understand that white is weak and black is strong. Understand that white is suffocation and black is a deep breath. Understand that black is life and white is death. Understand that blacks will live in glory while whites will die in shame. Understand that blackness is reality and whiteness but a game. Understand that blacks will hear first.
Poslušali ste prvi del intervjuja z legendarno politično nabrito ameriško zasedbo The Last Poets, ki je v nedeljo nastopila v živo v Zagrebu. Pogovarjamo se z dvema pesnikoma in vodjama zasedbe, Abjadunom Ojevolejem in Umarjem Bin Hasanom. Pogovarja se kolega Vidje Raj.
You know, there was a dance, it was all about the hip, the locking and blocking, you know, locking of dance and the challenges between the two groups or two people, or, you know, they will talk about you. This tradition was already been done. It's an African tradition because it's been done everywhere. In Cuba, in Puerto Rico, in Africa, they have in Jamaica, dub music and all this stuff they had. They talk about you. They talk about situation. They talk about, you know, so this is just a phenomenon that we, and it has its roots from people who are from Jamaica too, you know, people who had those roots from those places.
Grads from Mali also, the bards. Grads from Mali as well.
Mali, yeah. Well, Mali, yeah, you get pinpointed from Mali, but it's not just Mali, you know, you got Senegal all over.
And you know, like you talk about, like Jamaicans, two of the major architects of hip hop, Kool Herc and KRS, are from Jamaica.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they were, and we were told by them personally that back then, when they took the music out of the school, there was nothing really for them to listen to but The Last Poets, because we were the most innovative sound that they were hearing at the time. You got three voices and a conga player. But see, let's understand. You know, people look at it kind of mildly and say, oh, they got a drummer or whatever. No. The percussionist represented another voice. Matter of fact, the original voice of communication. Mm-hmm. So even in the Last Poets, we went through a bunch of different musicians before we decided on the brother who ended up setting the tone for what, I mean, this guy was a master.
The same anecdote refers to Heart Ensemble of Chicago. They were going around Paris for a long time without a drummer until they came with Moyet. So the last question I have, they don't give me that much. They don't. It's for the Slovenian radio, maybe for that reason. It's maybe so. As you mentioned, KRS-One, people like Paris, they played one of your early songs. This was Static Generic Remote Control. And but speaking of Mean Machine, but speaking of the modern day, for example, I think that the artist who has the most similarities with your style, I think he's Mos Def, and he's literally Mos Def. And he's literally referring to your music, like quoting different things from Strange Fruit.
I know what the ironic thing to that, even we were kind of agreeing, but Mos Def, there have been times when we have reached out to Mos Def to work with us, times when other people have reached out with Mos Def, promoters, producers, but it seems like always he never wanted to come. Somebody found a way to not come and be with us. We don't know if he thought that we would get on him for a copy of our style or kind of him at his.
That's what interests me. Yeah.
But we didn't. But we didn't. This is the last question.
This is the last question,
Rodrigo. But we didn't, because we thought that he was like one of our children. You know, we wanted to embrace him, but I guess he didn't like the parents that he had. So.
Well, we know Mos Def very well, and Mos Def is most full of shit. I mean, he's a tremendous talent. I think, matter of fact, the one credit I'll give him, of all your hip hop artists, I think Mos Def is probably the best actor.
Of all of them. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Because he has, when I see him on a screen, I'm impressed.
He's believable.
He's believable. I mean, he had one scene which I'll never forget. Where the guy tells him, he says, "Listen, we're gonna go see the fat man, but don't stare at the fat man." The guy must have been about 1,000 pounds. I mean, he was ridiculous. And that and when you can capture my imagination and not say a word, I mean, he looked, because he saw the fat man and it was amazing. He said, and he was transfixed, and that part alone told me, this boy's got a lot of skills. And we've seen him perform. He tries to sing a little bit. He ain't no singer, but he does a little bit. His acting is excellent.
Mm-hmm. I know in Cadillac Records he played
Chuck Berry.
And I believed he was Chuck Berry. I believed he was Chuck Berry.
Even though my man in that play, I mean, I always loved Jeffrey Wright. I think he's just
See, that's another thing too. He does not get
the part he deserves. No, he don't get respect.
He can play every part. Yeah. But as big up there with Diesel along with the motherfucker.
Exactly.
Jeffrey Wright is a bad motherfucker.
He's a bad boy,
Dominican. But listen, man, you're right. We thank you for giving us this opportunity.
Do you want just to give a jingle for the radio student? Radio Student Ljubljana.
Radio Student.
Student Ljubljana.
Yeah, student.
Radio Student.
Radio Student what?
Ljubljana.
Ljubljana,
yeah.
Ljubljana, or you?
Lou.
Okay. This is Marvin Hansen of The Last Poets I'm thinking about.
Well, a white man called in caves. So understand, young black man, who is the opposite of you. Understand so that you will know what you have to do. Understand that black is the beginning of white's end. Understand that whiteness is your enemy and blackness is your friend. Understand the height, weight of your mental depth. Understand that you are the original man, as quiet as it's kept. Understand that blacks will rise and whites will fall. Understand that white equals nothing and black equals all. Understand that our climate is hot and theirs is cold. And you are young and I am old. But all lies die when the truth is told. So understand, young black man, who is the opposite of you. Understand so that you will know what you have to do. Understand that black.
Poslušali ste intervju z zasedbo The Last Poets, ki je za Radio Študent nastal v nedeljo 14. novembra, ko je zasedba nastopila v Zagrebu. Z The Last Poets se je pogovarjal Vid Jeraj.
You understand what it means to be a free black man.
Intervju Radia Student.